When you need mealtime inspiration, it's worth shopping Kroger, where you'll find over 30,000 mouthwatering choices that excite your inner foodie. And no matter what tasty choice you make, you'll enjoy our everyday low prices, plus extra ways to save, like digital coupons worth over $600 each week. You can also save up to $1 off per gallon at the pump with fuel points. More savings and more inspiring flavors make shopping Kroger worth it every time. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Fuel restrictions apply.
Another day is here, and you're ready for it. What to wear? Check. Breakfast, lunch, and dinner? Check. Planning for what's next and how to save for it? That's where Bank of America can help. For your financial to-dos, Bank of America has experts ready to help get you closer to your goals. Get started at one of our local financial centers or 24-7 in our mobile banking app. Find a location near you at bankofamerica.com/talktous. What would you like the power to do? Mobile banking requires downloading the app and is only available for select devices. Message and data rates may apply. Bank of America NA, member FDIC.
The Province Sports Podcast.
Welcome to the White Towel Podcast. I'm Paul Chapman, joined by Ed Willis this week. This is our Canucks podcast. You can download it on Apple Podcasts. Please subscribe, give us a rating, let us know if you like it. It is brought to you by Key West Ford. Go to keywestford.com, Western Canada's largest selection of trucks. Also, BC's largest selection of Mustangs. So keywestford.com if you want to check that out. Ed, this is the Chicken Little Sky is Falling edition. I foolishly talked about their resiliency after coming back 2-0 down against Montreal on that road trip, and then everything fell apart. Four straight losses. Where is this team headed?
Yeah, that's... Who knows? You know, on the one hand, it's fairly simple, right? They allow way too many scoring chances. Defensively, they're not sound enough. When Markstrom was in, he masked all those problems. Now their goaltending has been average at best, and it's exposed all these warts in the game. Of course, it's never that easy with the Canucks. It's got to be all these other factors coming in. That first goal, like, it was like Rube Goldberg designed that goal. I still, for the life of me, can't figure out how the puck ended up where it is. And really, that goal defined the game for the first two periods. So here we are again. I don't know. It's disturbing that they're this fragile, disturbing that they can't seem to protect a lead, concerning they seem to come down with a case of the vapors when the pressure gets turned on to them. So that's where we are. I still thought this team was built to withstand injuries, to withstand pressure, to withstand a lot of the things they're facing now. They're just not doing it.
I know hockey culture is its own thing where, you know, you're kind of respecting the game and you don't say anything outlandish. And, of course, we know they're so managed and coached in what they have to say. But looking at some of those clips in the locker room last night – I mean, you would have thought they were all coming from a funeral. I mean, Thatcher Demko looks like he could need a hug. I know you were in the locker room last night. This is very typical of what you see of a team mired in a slump, but do they need some sort of a spark within?
Well, I think they do. I really do. They've got to, like, change the energy. They've got to change the script. They've got to change something, you know, and that was kind of the mantra everybody was repeating last night. We have to trust the process. You know, we've battled all year for 5 months, and we're in this place now. We've just got to revert back to those things we've been doing all along. And that's great when you've got Jacob Markstrom in net standing on his head virtually every night. Then maybe you can do those things. But I don't know. To me, they need a jolt of something. And I wrote this, and I think I've mentioned it in the other video, but I still don't understand. They're sitting there. They're getting nothing from Louis Erickson. They're getting nothing from Antoine Roussel. They've got the leading scorer in the American Hockey League down in Utica. They've got a guy, Justin Bailey, who's probably on, I think if you extrapolate his number, he's on a 40-goal pace. What you're telling me that they can't give you a little more than what you're getting from those other two guys? To me, they've just got to change it. They need a spark somewhere along the line. So maybe that, if that comes from within, the one thought I had was it might come from Jake Virtanen and the way he played. That was a big boy game he played against Arizona. And it was one of the few times I can remember him showing up and being a leader on a team when it mattered most. Maybe he can do that. Maybe he can, you know, change things around. But they need something.
Maybe they need Jacob Markstrom back more than anything.
Yeah, well, could be that simple, right?
And this is where we talk about. Obviously, we've got – they're still in with a very good shot to make the playoffs, and who knows what will happen if they get some guys back healthy and are in the playoffs. But, and you'll have to excuse me, I have a cold, so this is my tribute to Alain Vigneault, kind of have a lozenge thing going. Anyhow, apologies if this is making the podcast difficult to listen to. I'll try and shut up and let Ed talk. So on that note, when you look at the forwards, we know the skill they have there. And of course, it seems like Quinn Hughes is a bit banged up now, but we know how great Quinn Hughes is. But it's pretty clear if Markstrom now is going to be a priority for them to re-sign. I even look at the veterans. We've talked all year about how good Miller is. Toffoli, look, again, last night, scores a really nice goal. Pearson, what a great story he's been since he's come in. All fingers point to if this team is going to make the next leap is they need an upgrade on the blue line. Correct?
Well, yeah. I just don't know how they do it. They've got, you know, they went out and got Tyler Myers, and they had to know they're getting, at best, a three or a four. They're paying him like a top-pairing guy, and it's kind of, he's got warts in his game. Now, he's a minute eater. I think he's given them about everything they could have reasonably asked for at the start of the season. But they've got so many resources, you know, tied up in him. They've got Edler at another $5 million, and Tanev's unrestricted. I'm not sure how they fit all those pieces in, but I don't know how you upgrade it. I really don't. You know, Hughes will be like a year older next year, and maybe, you know, there's a bit of an uptick there. But this is kind of the team, and, you know, so we can now kind of dovetail that conversation into this one. What if they don't make the playoffs? Now they go into the off season. That's 5 years in a row. They're tight against the cap. How do they improve? This is kind of their team. This is it. They had a formula when Markstrom was in, and he was giving them Vezina caliber goaltending on virtually a nightly basis. That formula is no longer in play, and we're seeing kind of what's left now isn't good enough.
So that's a fascinating question, because when you look at so-called their next up prospects, obviously Pod Colson can't come for 2 years or for another season after this one at least. And, you know, people are getting all hot and bothered over seeing some of Hoglander's highlights. But again, you go back to the blue. I mean, when they drafted Quinn Hughes, it was this whole thing. They hadn't spent a high draft pick on a defenseman since Luc Bourdon. You go back through the Canucks history, they never had a top, you know, anyone you'd even put in the Norris Trophy conversation. So you do look at where it's coming from, but you talk about bringing up Bailey or Boucher, and I know there's been soreness or health issues. What about Joel Levy?
Well,
or is this just not a spot to put him in right now?
Well, so yeah, just further to your point about Joel Levy was the fifth overall pick. Invested really, really, really a steep price in him. It wouldn't be him. It would be Rafferty would be the guy. Ylevi is, he's just trying to find his way, and it could be another. I don't really see him being a, you know, viable call-up candidate until halfway through next season. And that's if he keeps on, you know, and all the reports are you sort of see flashes. You see moments where it looks like he's ready, getting ready or getting closer to making the next step. But there are still huge holes in his game. And if they're exposed at the American Hockey League level, they're certainly going to be exposed at the NHL level. So back to your point, I don't know what they do with the defense. I honestly don't. I think Rafferty is an option. I think Nikita Triamkin's potentially an option next year. Probably they might work a little cheaper than Tanev would on the open market, but Tanev's also given them just about everything they could have hoped for at the start of the year, plus he's been healthy. So again, we come back to this question, like, how do they improve that blue line? I'm not sure you can. Maybe it's got to be a systematic thing. Maybe you've got to change the way you play, change the philosophy. I think I mentioned it on the video. One of the thoughts that occurs to me, they play a style of game that kind of overreaches their talent level. You know, they think they can play this up-tempo game that the, you know, enforce and pressure all over the ice that the really good teams can do. Yes, they've scored more goals, but it leaves them exposed at the back end. And then right now, that's where they're being exploited.
That's leads me into something else I wanted to ask you about. We've only touched peripherally this year on the job that Travis Green has done, but right now is really, I mean, you can point at Elias Pettersson, you can look at Miller, you can look at Horvat and talk about leadership and all these things. But this is a stand up and be counted moment for our coach, is it not?
Yeah, I think it is. It is. Now, heading into the off season, who does the finger get pointed at? Does it get pointed at Benning? Does it get pointed at Green? Does Benning get to fire another coach? especially given some of the, you know, the decisions and some of the contracts that have been handed out under his watch. I don't know, but geez, you know, this collapse, if it happens, it's fairly epic. And it really eats away at the credibility of Green as a head coach. And you wonder, you know, can they bring him back if they finish this tank job? And I'm not sure if you can. I'm not sure if you can. It just seems like he would have lost the confidence of the player, lost the confidence of ownership, and lost the confidence of the marketplace. And I think it's too bad because I think he's a pretty good coach. I think, you know, in time he will round into, you know, a fairly successful NHL coach. It's just like it's happening now. And, yeah, it is. It's a watershed moment.
You know, it's funny. I know you're big on the Twitter, Ed. When you said, who does the finger get pointed at, Green, Benning, I just, in my head, I have that Spider-Man meme where the two Spider-Men are pointing at each other. And that's how I see this, you know, almost like that clip from The Office as well, where they're all doing the guns pointed at each other, like the Reservoir Dogs scene. But it's, I think it is pretty clear. If this momentous collapse, I still think they might the playoffs personally, but if this collapse continues, the key thing you mentioned there is ownership. Yeah. I mean, you just think that someone has to pay for this, right? Like this has been when you look at the Aquilini's sort of pedigree since they bought the team, this is a fairly tenured group aside from Trevor being peeled off, and we know the circumstances there. That was definitely an ownership call. But I look at this group here and I go, yeah, I think someone's going to have to pay the price.
Yeah, I do too. 5 years out of the playoff, Benning's sixth year on the job. Absolutely. I'm sorry. I'm still stunned by your Reservoir Dogs reference. That was awesome to drop that one in for you kids out there. And it's amazing how well that movie holds up. It was really the one that put Quentin Tarantino on the map. But I digress. Yeah, and isn't that always the way? And it's been really the case since the Aquilinis took over. They're the wild card in this. You just never seem to know from moment to moment. The one thing I would say is I think, you know, Benning has reflected ownership's philosophy there to go out, to win now, to be aggressive in the player market, to trade for JT Miller, to trade for Tyler Toffoli, to, you know, expend some fairly rich assets in getting them, all for the sake of winning now. Now, if that doesn't work and they don't make the playoffs, we come back to this question. Who do you point the finger at? Do you point the finger at the general manager who's built this team and built this roster, you know, and given the coach a chance? At the same time, looking at how hamstrung they're going to be going forward under the salary cap, or do you point the finger at the head coach? It's an interesting one.
It's a very interesting one because it is, in many ways, a chicken and egg thing, right? You know, they've had some quality high draft picks that we've talked about sort of ad nauseum. But the reason you're getting high quality draft picks is because your team's bad. Mm-hmm. And while they haven't hit the home run in terms of the lottery ball, they've hit the home run in the guys they've ended up with.
Yeah.
And they seemingly have some more great offensive talent coming down the pipe. But then you look at how, like, if I was to question betting, obviously there's still that free agency situation there. And you look at some of the big contracts with not very high impact players. I had not been impressed with Jim Benning's trade acumen, except now you look at guys like Pearson and Toffoli, and it actually looks okay.
Miller,
obviously, yeah.
Miller was a home run, absolutely.
So they've upgraded there. Yeah. So, yeah, if you look at where this team goes from here, dare I say it, while Jim Benning is the lightning rod, I think you'd almost have to question the coaching more than the talent that he's got.
Well, and again, and I just sort of the way ownership is lined up, And the way they, you know, they extended Benning, they basically chose his vision of the team over Trevor Linden's vision of the team. That's an oversimplification, but that's about what it comes down to. Then you're inclined to think, you know, yeah, he has the quote-unquote confidence of ownership. Now, does that last? Does that buy him another year if they're out of the playoffs again for the fifth straight year? It's a great question. I don't know. And like I said, like reading this ownership group is an inexact science at best. When you think they're going to do one thing, they tend to do the other and vice versa. So I don't know. It just shapes up. There's just so much riding on these last 16 games, Paul. It really is.
Oh, absolutely.
You know, you think of, you know, the narrative that was being spun 2 weeks ago after that win against Boston. You know, they get Toffoli in the lineup. You know, they beat the hated Bruins 9-3 on home ice. I can't remember where that put them in the standings, but it just seemed unthinkable.
All of a sudden, people started quoting where they were in the overall NHL standings for the first time. Instead of just saying, hey, they're solidly in a wild card spot, people were like, they're sixth in the NHL
and
or fifth in the NHL.
And here we are 10 days later. Yeah. And again, you know, people are pounding their chest and rending their garments, as our colleague and good friend Tony Gallagher used to say.
And staring at a schedule.
It really is. Like in the history, in the great and glorious history of this franchise, this is a moment. This really is. This one could go down, and I don't want to over-dramatize it because God knows there's enough of that going on. But you think of where this team was and then think of how fast this has all happened. It really is such a Canucks way of doing things.
It is. And if staring at the schedule here, you talk about how crucial these next games are. Colorado, Columbus, and the New York Islanders at home.
Yeah.
And then on the road for back-to-backs against Arizona and Colorado again. Not the most difficult schedule, but certainly not an easy one. And those two Colorado games and that other, the rematch with Arizona, those are massive games. I guess this is what we were talking about when we said meaningful games in March, though.
Well, yeah. So, and again, so let's kind of take a step back. And I think most people thought the same thing about this team, that, you know, they were probably still a year or two away, probably still a player or two away. They were going to be improved. They were going to, you know, force the issue until mid-March, but ultimately they were going to come up a little short. Now, that's kind of the way it's played out. They didn't quite see the script being written the way it was, though. You know, for them to look so secure and so good and so confident from 1 minute to now being, you know, in this kind of panic mode and taking the rest of the market and taking the market with them. So, it's it's such a weird, weird situation and so hard to, you know, to do a really, you know, strict, coldly analytical view of what's happened because there's just so many variables involved here.
Yeah, if you look, it's funny. If you look at their goals against and goals for per game, I think they're ninth in goals for and 10th in goals against. Like, you know, so I'm not great at math, but that's top third of the NHL. But I think when you look at where they are, this is where, to me, it's a fascinating offseason and a finish because they seem on the knife edge, right? Like, they're there, but what do they need to push them, like, full-time to have that consistency, to not go through these slumps, to not have to rely on all-world goaltending? Or is this team going to slide back the other way and just look like they're hopeless? And we've seen so many teams. I mean, Colorado themselves had looked like they'd, you know, take a step, then they have two bad seasons. But you look at the collection of talent and say, okay, they're finally where they should be. Calgary, another team. Edmonton, another team. There's a lot of teams in the West that have a lot of talent that haven't been able to put it together, and the Canucks are right in the mix there. I had gone from feeling that, you know, the way this team has looked, and you're right, you cite games like against the Bruins, that they're capable of beating whoever they play in the first round. But I'm not so sure you'd say that now. And I guess that speaks to a young team and how fragile they are.
Well, yeah. And, you know, what you were saying, you know, so how did they make that next step? How did they, impose themselves on the Western Conference? And to me, we have to find out. So is Elias Pettersson a superstar center? Is he a franchise center or just a really good one? There's a huge difference there. I think of where Nathan MacKinnon was in his first 3 years, and I don't have the data, but I know nobody, or there's some question where he was going to be the player he is now, which is one of the top five players in the league. You look at Pettersson, I wouldn't go that far with him, but can he be that guy? Can he be one of the 10 top centers in the NHL? Is Brock Besser a 25-goal scorer, or is he a 35-goal scorer? Huge difference. You know, Quinn Hughes seems to be, you know, that guy, but, you know, can he do that in a year in, year out, and can he maybe get to that 70-75-point level? I think we can now put Jake Virtanen into that conversation, too. Is he a legitimate 20-20 guy, and maybe can he push that forward and be a 25-goal scorer? I mean, those are four really big pieces, and there's still some upside there with the young players, and to me, that's kind of what it's going to determine where this team goes. They've all taken a bit of a step this year, but can they take Besser's kind of a different situation, I know, but can they take that next step to get into that rarefied air where the very best players in the NHL breathe?
Yeah, big questions, Ed. Great stuff. I think we'll leave it there. As we've touched upon all podcasts, these next handful of games for the Canucks are going to be very telling as to where the season goes into answering those questions. Thanks for listening, everyone. We'll be back again next week. Thanks to Key West Ford, keywestford.com. BC's largest selection of Mustangs. They also have Western Canada's largest selection of trucks, so check them out if you're in the market for either of those. Again, subscribe to us through Apple Podcasts. You can read Ed's columns at theprovince.com, vancouversun.com. Check out our videos and more of our Canucks content every day. Thanks, folks.